Hello everyone, I hope all of you are doing good. Welcome to Forensic Diaries featured by the Forensic Times. I'm Dr. Anuja and I'm going to be your host for today's podcast. There's a famous forensic anthropological saying that is, we speak for the dead to protect the living. Testimony to this adage are the various identification techniques available at our disposal when unidentified remains are found. History tells us that there are several cases, even when the bodies are damaged beyond recognition, that have been solved using an array of techniques. Today we will see one such case, an interesting one at that, the Jigsaw Murders. In the face of natural calamities, fire or road accidents, or even gruesome crimes, there may be complete disfigurement of the remains, including facial features. Thus, identification may prove to be difficult. In such cases, presence of skeletal remains may aid in identification. However, there may be instances where the remains may be mangled or scattered. It is in these circumstances that the skull and dentition come into foray. The Jigsaw Murders is a case where several novel and intriguing techniques were used to aid in the identification of the victims and nabbing the suspect, thereby aiding in the procurement of justice. So, a little background into this case. This case is about a Mr. Buck Ruxton, who was born as Bakhtiar Rustamji Ratanji Hakim in Bombay, India in 1899. He studied medicine at the Universities of Bombay and London. Before taking up his post as a physician in Lancaster in 1930, he had served with the Indian Medical Corps in Iraq and had gained further experiences as a doctor in London. In Lancaster, he took over a substantial practice which catered largely to a working class population. He lived in Lancaster with his wife Isabella Ruxton, three children and their maid Mary Jane Rogerson near the English-Scottish border. So what was the crime that he committed? Mrs. Isabella Ruxton, wife of Dr. Buck Ruxton, and her maid Mary Rogerson was last seen on September 14, 1935. Dr. Ruxton claimed that his wife Isabella Ruxton had gone with the maid Mary to Edinburgh. He stated that Mary was pregnant and his wife accompanied the maid to help her obtain an abortion, which was illegal back then. Now remember, we're talking about way back in 1935 when abortion was considered illegal. Despite his statements, Dr. Buck Ruxton was the prime suspect. Why? This was because prior to the disappearance of his wife and the maid, Dr. Ruxton had openly accused his wife of infidelity and threatened her with violence. When first interviewed by the police, he had a gash, which is nothing but a long, deep cut on his hand, and his statements about his wife's and nursemaid's whereabouts were inconsistent. While he claimed that they had been to Edinburgh, his wife's clothing was still in the house and the car that she used was parked outside. Although the discrepancies were apparent, without the presence of dead bodies, it was impossible to make any claims. On 29 September 1935, a passerby discovered some remains wrapped in a newspaper under a bridge in Scotland. Portions of the victims' bodies were bundled together in bags under the bridge at Moffat, England, near the Scottish border. Other parts, including the heads, were strewn about the banks of the creeks and adjacent areas. A team of forensic experts was assembled. It was evident that the perpetrator had worked hard to render the bodies unidentifiable. Since the body parts of the two victims were jumbled and had to be reassembled, newspapers called the case the Jigsaw Murders. The painstaking reconstruction of the bodies was performed by forensic anthropologist John Glaister Jr. and anatomist James Cooper Brash. Upon doing so, it was noticed that the tips of the fingers of one of the victims were cut off to prevent fingerprint identification. The skill with which the bodies were mutilated led the police to hypothesize that the murderer had anatomical training and knew how to use a scalpel. The newspaper that was used to wrap some of the body parts was a special edition of the Sunday Graphic that was only sold in the Lancaster area, dated 15th September 1935. The police were quick to investigate on this lead. This case used several novel techniques, of which a pioneering technique of photographic superimposition was done. This was one of the key evidences that led to Dr. Ruxton's conviction and execution. In this case, the skulls of the two victims were compared with multiple existing portraits to confirm the identifications. So basically, the investigators photographed both the skulls in the same orientation as an existing photograph of Mrs. Ruxton. Then they laid a photo transparency of this skull over the photograph to establish that the skull was Mrs. Ruxton's. During the investigation, various maggot specimens were collected from the remains and sent to a laboratory at the University of Edinburgh. It was there that specialist Dr. Mearns identified the species as Calophora vicina, more commonly known as blowflies. By examining the maggots, it was established that they were somewhere between 12 and 14 days old, thus giving the minimum time for which the remains had been left near the stream. This window of time matched with that of Isabella and Mary's disappearance. This technique of using maggots to determine the time of death is a part of forensic entomology. Entomology meaning study of insects. With the timeline being narrowed down, investigators were able to gain access to the Ruxton home, where traces of blood and human tissue were found in the bathroom. From the skull sutures on both the bodies, Glaister and Smith were able to determine that one of the bodies was that of a woman aged approximately between 35 and 45 years, and the second body was that of a woman aged approximately between 18 and 25 years. In reference to the cause of death, the older woman had 5 stab wounds to the chest, several broken bones, and numerous bruises. In addition, her lungs were remarkably congested and her hyoid bone had been broken, indicating that she had been strangled before the other injuries had been inflicted. The limbs and head of the second victim bore signs of excessive blunt force trauma, indicating that she had been extensively bludgeoned with an unknown instrument. Professors Glaister, Brash and Smith further concluded that the mutilation of the two bodies would have taken approximately 8 hours to complete, and that the two bodies had been drained of both blood and viscera at the time of their dismemberment. Professor James Cooper Brash constructed replica models of the two victims' left feet in a flexible gelatin glycerin mixture, and this was placed in the shoes the woman had worn when they were alive. The replica foot of the first victim recovered precisely fitted shoes worn by Isabella Ruxton, and that of the second victim fitted shoes worn by Mary Jane Rogerson. All of these evidences played a crucial role in putting Dr. Buck Ruxton in the dock. Dr. Ruxton's trial, which took place in March 1936, lasted for 11 days. He maintained his innocence throughout the trial. The evidence pointed otherwise, and hence he was found guilty and sentenced to be hanged to death. He was hanged at Strangeways Prison, Manchester, on the morning of 12th May 1936. The success of the methods used in the Ruxton case was widely reported in the press. This led to increased public and professional trust in the capabilities of forensic science. Having seen the crime, let's now look into what actually happened on the day of the murder. On the evening of 14 September 1935, Isabella Ruxton left the family home to view the Blackpool illuminations and visit two of her sisters who lived nearby. She left Blackpool to return home at approximately 11:30 p.m. Upon her return to Dalton Square, where the Ruxtons lived, in the early hours of Sunday, that is 15 September, Ruxton's jealousy and paranoia apparently overwhelmed him, and he strangled Isabella to death with his bare hands before beating and stabbing her body. This act was witnessed by the housemaid, and therefore, he extensively bludgeoned her to death by strangulation. The amount of blood subsequently discovered on the stairs, walls, and carpeting of Ruxton household indicated excessive blood flow prior to the body's mutilation, thus leading to the conclusion that Ruxton had stabbed either or both of his victims extensively shortly before or after death. On the day prior to the murders, Ruxton informed one of the two charwomen he and Isabella had employed not to come to his premises until Monday, 16th September. Also, within hours of the murders, he visited the home of the other woman he had employed and likewise told her not to clean his premises until 16th September, explaining that Isabella and Mary had travelled to Edinburgh. After he had driven his children to the home of a dentist with whom he and Isabella had formed a close friendship, he and asking the couple to look after his children for the day, he returned to his home and proceeded to extensively dismember and mutilate both the bodies in the bathroom of his home in an effort to hide their identities. Several hours later, at approximately 4:30 p.m., Ruxton visited the home of one of his patients, a Mrs. Hampshire, and asked both her and her husband to return to Dalton Square in order to help him prepare for the decorators who were expected to arrive the following morning to perform some work he claimed he had been pre-arranged several months previously. So basically, he wanted to redecorate parts of his home in order to hide the evidence. When Mrs. Hampshire arrived at Dalton Square, she found the house in a state of disarray. As she would later testify at Ruxton's trial, all the carpeting had been removed from the stairs and several sections of the flooring were littered with straw, which also protruded from beneath a locked bedroom door. Moreover, in the waiting room of the property, Mrs. Hampshire discovered several rolled up sections of carpeting, stair pads, and a stained suit. In the garden of the property, Mrs. Hampshire also discovered two further sections of carpeting and several burned towels. Before the Hampshires left Dalton Square, they were given several sections of stained stair carpeting and Ruxton's stained suit to keep, upon the condition that they thoroughly cleaned them. So how was the arrest made? On the evening of 12th October, Ruxton was arrested by Lancaster police and extensively questioned throughout the night. When asked to account for his whereabouts between 14th and 29th September, Ruxton produced a handwritten document entitled My Movements, which he then passed on to the investigators before making a statement based on what he had written. So Ruxton denied that he had ever been to Scotland after having established his Lancaster practice. However, he was unable to explain why his car registration number had been logged by the police. What had actually happened was that while en route to dispose the dismembered body parts, he hit into a cyclist and drove away. So the cyclist noted down his car registration number and reported it to the police. This incident acted as a strong circumstantial evidence which Buck Ruxton completely denied. He was further unable to explain why a police search of his home the previous day had revealed extensive traces of bloodstains on the stairs, railings, and various carpets within the property, despite evidence of the house being extensively cleaned and several walls around the staircase being recently redecorated. Moreover, he was also unable to explain why traces of human fat and body tissue had been discovered within the drains of his property, with much of this material recovered from the section of the drains leading directly from the bathroom. In the early hours of 13th October, the fingerprint and palm prints upon the second set of human hands discovered were found to be a match for Mary Jane Rogerson. Upon hearing this forensic match, Ruxton was formally charged with the murder of Mary Rogerson at 7:20 a.m. that morning. On 5th November, he was further charged with the murder of his wife, whose remains were positively identified using the technique of craniofacial superimposition, in which an X-ray of her skull was superimposed on a photograph taken of her when she was alive. Thus, he was arrested. Now, what is the aftermath of his arrest? So, in the hours immediately prior to his execution, Buck Ruxton wrote a letter to his chief defense counsel, Norman Burkitt Casey, wherein he thanked Burkitt for the skill in which he had conducted his defense before stating, "I know that in a few hours I shall be going to meet my maker, but I say to you, sir, I am entirely innocent of this crime." The day after his arrest, Ruxton submitted a handwritten confession which he had instructed be opened only in the event of his execution or returned to him should he be acquitted. In this confession, Ruxton admitted to killing his wife while in a state of jealous fury, only to be interrupted in the act by Mary Jane Rogerson. Resultingly, he stated he had to also kill her. What's the trivia surrounding this case? The house on Dalton Square, where the murders were committed, remained empty for decades because of its notorious reputation. Eventually, in the 1980s, the building was gutted and underwent substantial internal alteration. Thereafter, it became an architect's office. However, it still remains a non-residential building. The bath in which Buck Ruxton dismembered his victims was removed and used as evidence during his trial. Afterwards, it was used as a horse trough by the Mounted Police Division at its headquarters in Preston. The area in and around Garden Home Lynn, where Ruxton had disposed of the dismembered body parts of Isabella Ruxton and Mary Jane Rogerson, would become colloquially known in and around Moffat as Ruxton's Dump. The dismembered remains of Mary Rogerson were buried in the churchyard at Overton, a small village near the neighbouring town of Mokambe. There was a pub called Ruxton's, less than 50 metres from where Dr. Ruxton lived. However, the name was later changed to The Square. It is important to note that this case took place in 1935-36, long before the sophisticated forensic evidence gathering techniques of today. Thus, it is indeed quite commendable that they came up with such novel techniques to crack this case. This case obviously garnered a lot of media attention. Several radio shows and television series broadcasted the Jigsaw murders, some of which included Bodies Under the Bridge, Dr. Ruxton Axe Killer, etc. BBC dedicated an entire episode to the Jigsaw murders in their series Catching History's Criminals. Books exclusively devoted to the murders were published, of which Ruxton, The First Modern Murder, completely focuses on the investigation into the Ruxton murders and the ensuing trial and conviction of Buck Ruxton. The Ruxton trial caught the public interest to such an extent that there was even a song about it as follows. Bloodstains on the carpet, bloodstains on the knives. Oh, Dr. Buck Ruxton, you murdered your wife. Then Mary, she saw you, you thought she would tell. So, Dr. Buck Ruxton, you killed her as well. With this, we come to the end of this podcast. I hope you all found this podcast interesting and informative as well. If you did, do like and subscribe to our podcast channel available on Spotify, JioSaavn, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you wish to get featured in this podcast channel, email us at theforensictimes@gmail.com. Thank you for your time, everyone. Do stay safe and take care. Bye-bye.